I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. Today, we continue the series on spirituality, faith, and healing with two great interviews. I'm also happy to announce a new sponsor, and we'll talk more about her midway through the show. I have refused several of these previously because I was waiting for the right one to come along, and I believe this is it. My first guest, Dr. Harold G. Koenig, MD, MHSC, is the second lead interview for this series. Dr. Bernie Siegel was interviewed for the last show. Dr. Koenig is internationally known for his research, writing, and lecturing on spirituality, religion, and healing. Dr. Koenig completed his undergraduate education at Stanford University, his medical training at the University of California at San Francisco, and his geriatric medicine, psychiatry, and biostatistics training at Duke University. He is board certified in general psychiatry, and geriatric medicine, and is also on the faculty at Duke University as professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences and associate professor of medicine. He is also a registered nurse. Dr. Koenig is founder and former director of Duke University's Center for the Study of Religion, Spirituality, and Health, and is founding co-director of the current Center of Spirituality, Theology, and Health at Duke University Medical Center. He has published extensively in the fields of mental health, geriatrics, and religion, with close to 350 scientific peer-reviewed articles and book chapters, and nearly 40 books in print or in preparation. He is the former editor-in-chief of the International Journal of Psychiatry and Medicine and of Science and Theology News. His research on medicine, health, and ethical issues in medicine has been featured on over 50 national and international TV news programs, including The Today Show, ABC's World News Tonight, and several times on Good Morning America. Over 100 national or international radio programs, including multiple NPR and BBC interviews, and hundreds of national and international newspapers and magazines, including cover stories for Reader's Digest, Parade Magazine, and Newsweek. Dr. Koenig has given testimony before the U.S. Senate in September of 1998 and the U.S. House of Representatives September 2008 concerning the effect of religious involvement on public health. He has been interviewed by James Dobson on Focus on the Family, and by Robert Schuller in the Crystal Cathedral on the Hour of Prayer. He has also been nominated twice for the Templeton Prize for Progress in Religion. Dr. Koenig's latest books include The Healing Power of Faith, published by Simon & Schuster in 2001, The Handbook of Religion and Health, published by the Oxford University Press in 2001, and upcoming 2011, his autobiography, The Healing Connection in 2004, Faith and Mental Health in 2005, In the Wake of Disaster by Templeton Press, Spirituality and Patient Care Second Edition in 2007, and Medicine, Religion, and Health in 2008, published by Templeton Foundation Press. Dr. Koenig travels extensively to give workshops and seminar presentations, and more information is available at www.spirituality.duke.edu/about/H. Koenig/. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Harold, and I look forward to hearing about faith, religion, and healing. First of all, you've done a lot of research on religion and healing. Do you believe that prayer is useful in the healing process?
I do believe that prayer can be useful in the healing process.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes worry a little bit, though, that prayer is being used not for the intention that it was designed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as if, you know, some, as if I would know the intention for it was designed. But people use prayer, and understandably so, for their health. They have an illness, and so they pray, and they believe that God or whatever is mm-hmm. going to heal them of
mm-hmm.
this disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so prayer is used as a tool in some respects to achieve health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that is done outside of a relationship with God, then it really puts God in a position of being a magician or a genie that is at the beck and call of people. But prayer is not for getting things.
Mm-hmm.
It's to nourish a relationship with God,
mm-hmm.
to help that to develop, to get to know God and God's mind, and so that our own minds can conform
mm-hmm.
to God's mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the purpose of prayer, as I understand it. It's not to get things or to get healing or any of that. It's really to conform us to His way of thinking. And
mm-hmm.
when we do that, that is the most natural course to healing and wholeness.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I'm wondering if maybe most people don't use prayer to ask for things.
Oh, I tell you, I certainly do. But I keep reminding myself that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not the purpose of prayer. I've
mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of things happen to me. I have a chronic pain syndrome. I was not long ago diagnosed with prostate cancer and had half of my lower body dissected out,
mm-hmm.
I was praying for healing,
mm-hmm.
for recovery,
mm-hmm.
to be completely free of this pain and of this cancer. So there's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I prayed, I kind of follow that a little bit with according to your will, because
mm-hmm.
maybe God knows more than I do about what needs to be healed in my life. It may not be the prostate cancer
mm-hmm.
or the chronic pain. In fact, those things could work in my life to create a greater, more long-lasting healing throughout all of eternity than if they were taken out of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's always God's will be done, along with, you know, some pretty desperate prayers for
right.
for help and relief.
Now, I found that for me, Harold, it's effective for my prayers. I thank God. And I use affirmations to ask for what I want.
That's good.
And that works for me. And so
good.
When I walk the beach at 6:30 in the morning, I use my affirmations. And when I do my meditation and my prayers in the after I finish the walk and at night, then I'm thanking God for all of the things that have come to me, which is a fantastic amount of things. So I separate the two out in my own life.
Well, you know, the gratefulness is one is tremendous. What you're talking about, the thanking of God for what you do have. That, you know, it's so easy to forget what we do have and focus on what we don't have. And
right.
you know, this sense of continually being grateful. I mean, you can literally change your emotions within seconds
mm-hmm.
by thinking about what's good in your life. I mean, within seconds, almost an immediate change by being grateful. And we're actually very interested in studying. You can measure gratefulness now.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a six-item measure of gratefulness.
Oh.
And we can now look at the relationship with various aspects of health over time
mm-hmm.
to really see whether or not those who are grateful actually do have better mental health and perhaps even better physical health.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm available. I tell you, I have a strong faith, and I'm very positive, and I'm 78, and I have no chronic illnesses, no prescribed medications.
Wonderful.
And
that's
so
amazing.
It's probably partly genes, but I think it's also partly my attitude toward
yes.
life. And
yeah, I don't doubt that at all. It's a complex thing that involves a combination of your genetic makeup and your attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the midst of your circumstances, no question about that.
Now, I noted in some of your writing that you make a distinction between religion and spirituality because it was easier to measure religion
yes.
than spirituality. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, as a researcher, mm-hmm. I'm faced with having to measure and quantify different characteristics mm-hmm. of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at their physical health, so I can measure their blood pressure. I can assess their longevity by, you know, how many years they live. Measure their immune functioning, their various other aspects of their physiological functioning. So that's all, you know, you can measure it. It's quantitative. But then we have to measure spirituality
mm-hmm.
and other things like depression and social support and positive emotions, gratefulness, having a positive attitude. And there are all different kinds of measures for the gratefulness and having a positive attitude and positive emotions, et cetera, et cetera. And the big question is, how are you going to measure spirituality?
Mm-hmm.
And that depends on how you define it.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that's distinctive about spirituality that separates it from positive emotions, good attitudes, virtuous living,
mm-hmm.
all of which have, you know, atheists also do that, and they would not claim that they're spiritual. The only thing distinctive about spirituality is the person's religious beliefs,
mm-hmm.
practices, and commitments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that is what we measure. We measure a person's religious beliefs and behaviors and experiences, and it doesn't have to just be confined to church.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, religious attendance is really only one of, I think, 20 or 30 different aspects of religion, but we focus on religion because that's what really separates out spirituality from everything else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And have you found a difference in those people that pray and go to church as far as their positive and mental health?
Yes, we have found a difference in people's mental health and physical health.
Mm-hmm.
Based on their frequency of religious activities and degree of religious involvement.
Mm-hmm.
There are now probably close to 1,800 studies that have found better health, whether that be better psychological health, social health, physical health, among those who are more religious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's out of a total number of probably close to 3,000 studies. So
wow.
There have been about 3,000 studies. And of those, about 1,800 show statistically significant differences between those who are religiously involved and those who are
mm-hmm.
less so.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Then, is there a difference in the effect on healing of self-prayer versus praying for others, or are they the same?
Well, that's a very good question. That hasn't really been studied all that well, but frequency of prayer is associated with some health benefits. There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
When you're praying for others, that also provides you with health benefits. So those who pray for others are emotionally healthier. One,
mm-hmm.
one aspect of that is that when people become depressed or have emotional problems or are extremely stressed out, they become very self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
They become very introspective, and they're focusing on their problems and on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And one way to help people get out of these periods of stress and depression and anxiety is to get them focused on something outside of themselves. And praying for others does that.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of focuses on the problems that you know others are having, and then praying for them for comfort and hope and meaning. And
mm-hmm.
that doing that then has the consequence of doing
mm-hmm.
that is that the person who is praying for the others does better.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, yeah. Do you look at religious practices separately, such as prayer, meditation, Bible reading, church attendance, or do you look at these things in total in terms of their effect on physical mental health?
That's a very good question, and we've actually done it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked at them separately, and then we tried to combine them in combinations
mm-hmm.
to see what seems to be
mm-hmm.
the factor that has has the greatest effect. And it looks like the combination of engaging in public religious practices, i.e. attending church, being part of a prayer group or a Bible study group or some kind of public religious group, that together with the private religious activities such as prayer, meditation, mm-hmm. Bible study, that combination of both the public religious involvement and the private religious involvement seems to have the strongest relationship, at least with certain health outcomes such as blood pressure
mm-hmm.
and depression, for example.
Mm-hmm. Great. Then you've also mentioned that people that, or I'm asking you, people that are religious, do they seem to live longer? Are they happier? Or is it the same for religious versus non-religious?
People who are religious do seem to be happier. They have higher levels of well-being, and they also tend to live longer than mm-hmm. those who are less religiously involved.
Mm-hmm.
And there have now been, with regard to happiness, well-being, there have been about 350 studies now.
Wow.
And of those, about close to 80% find that the religious person tends to be happier and,
mm-hmm.
and have more positive emotions.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to longevity, there have been about 114 maybe more, maybe about 120. I'm forgetting the exact number of studies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But about 65 to 70% find that religious people live longer. So
mm-hmm.
it seems as though religious people are both, you know, happier mm-hmm. and live longer. So it's like, you know, how can you beat that?
Right. I like that. Right.
Now, of course, we all know that it's not quite that simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that many times deeply religious people, and in fact to become deeply religious or spiritual, one has to go through very difficult experiences in life.
Mm-hmm.
And the well-being or the happiness is really kind of the icing on the cake, the kind of cake that kind of happens naturally as a result of going through those experiences and developing your spiritual life. But while you're going through those experiences, most people don't feel very good. They're,
mm-hmm.
they're not particularly happy. Many are suffering very much. They're maybe depressed or anxious or going through a very difficult time. And those challenges tend to stretch us and deepen us in this spiritual realm, which ultimately, I think, does generate more happiness,
mm-hmm.
more a sense of purpose and meaning,
mm-hmm.
and a more hope and more vision about one's life. So
mm-hmm.
it's kind of complicated, but you know, overall it does seem to pan out, but the road to it can be very winding.
Right, right. When I had lung cancer, it was a very trying experience, but when I look back at it, it was the best experience that I've had in my life because it brought about such changes in my life. And I became, as you say, more spiritual. I became more considerate of other people. I became more giving. And so I just also interviewed a woman that had polio when she was 5 and now more recently had post-polio syndrome. And she talks the same way. And I've noticed this over and over again just with people that I've talked with, that they become so optimistic, so appreciative, so enjoying of life after having a hardship, as you say.
Mm. You know, the challenge is, of course, people can go both ways. They can
mm-hmm.
go the way you describe, and then many people go the other way. After
mm-hmm.
a hardship, they get discouraged and give up, get depressed, and withdraw and die. Unhappy and with an unfulfilled life that is meaningless and horrific. And that
mm-hmm.
just does happen. So I guess it's important to, when you're at those crossroads, to find some way to take the right path here.
Right.
Because there are many paths, and some of them do not end up where any of us would want to be.
Oh. And is there any research that helps to determine which way the individual is going to go?
Well, you know, we've done a little research in chronically ill medical inpatients,
mm-hmm.
and we've looked at their level of religious involvement and other characteristics as well to try to predict the course that depression takes. These are depressed people with mm-hmm. chronic lung disease and chronic heart failure. And so about 1,000 of them. And
mm-hmm.
we followed about 850 of them for about 6 months. And we tried to see what were the characteristics that predicted those who got better from their depression and controlling for their physical illness and their disability. And again, it does seem like those who are more religiously active
mm-hmm.
do tend to follow the path that leads to a better place.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. That's interesting. Now, Harold, how can health personnel, physicians and nurses and all, use the information that you have found as far as faith and healing and church attendance and some of these things in their practice? How can they use these?
Well, you know, there are some limitations
mm-hmm.
In what you can do with this information. You can't go out and prescribe religion or tell people to pray more or go to church or read their
mm-hmm.
Bible.
Mm-hmm.
That is just, it's not appropriate. It's
right.
ethically questionable. And so, however, most patients that we're going to see in our practices
mm-hmm.
are going to be religious
mm-hmm.
because this is a religious nation.
Right.
And there are many religious nations around
mm-hmm.
the world. And so they're already religious. They already have religious resources.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm asking physicians and other healthcare professionals to do is to simply take a spiritual history and find out what role this plays in their life. Does it help them to cope? Is it making them more anxious or
mm-hmm.
distressed?
Mm-hmm.
How does it influence their medical decisions? Are there any spiritual needs that are present that someone might be able to address? For example, the chaplain or perhaps
mm-hmm.
a pastoral counselor. But to ask those questions of patients, learn a little bit about the role that their faith plays in their life, and if it seems to be positive, support that.
Mm-hmm.
Support that faith in that person's life, and if there are issues there, get them connected to someone who can help.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really all I'm trying to get the healthcare professionals
mm-hmm.
to do, and that is to engage patients in discussions about these issues, which are right at the surface, especially when people are sick.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you brought up pastors, because I think that we think that only the health personnel can handle physical, mental problems, and yet when I was working on my doctorate, I remember the research showed that a third of all people that go to that have mental health concerns that go to pastors will get better, and a third of all people that go to psychiatrists will get better. So the pastors seem to do just as well, but this was all, they were lumped together. They were not separated out as to what the mental health problems were, and so I'm sure that there are things that the psychiatrist does better and things that the pastor does better, but I think we tend to sometimes forget that there are other people that can handle some of the mental health problems as well as people in the health professions.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, there's a lot of mental health care that's done by clergy. It's on average clergy spend about 15% of their time
mm-hmm.
counseling, whether that be marital counseling, whether it be personal, individual counseling. But that's a lot of time spent
right.
in counseling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are certain things that clergy can handle, which is probably about 75% of everything that we need to handle. But that other 25%
mm-hmm.
needs to have somebody else, like a healthcare professional, mental healthcare professional, deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody gets severely depressed or starts having psychotic symptoms, that's the time to get them in to see a healthcare professional who's probably going to rely on medication to help get them
right.
to a point
mm-hmm.
that they can then get benefit from the counseling that
mm-hmm.
the clergy can provide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, Harold, would you tell us about your books and services and how the public can reach you?
Well, I direct a center for the study of religion, spirituality, and health. Actually, the new title is Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health at Duke University Medical Center. We have a website. If listeners will go to that website, there are all sorts of resources there, including books and all sorts of stuff. And I would really encourage you. All you got to do is go to Google and put in Duke University Center for Spirituality, and you'll come up immediately, and then you can get on the website. You don't even have to, you know, you have to remember what the website is. Just remember to Google Duke University and Center for Spirituality, and you'll get us.
And I know that you've had 40-some books, around 40 books. And
yes, it's been fun. It's been fun studying this area and writing about it. And you meet the most wonderful people as you're going, you know, you're doing this work. Mm-hmm. So I'm very thrilled and grateful for being somehow directed into this area of research and practice.
Now, where would people find your books? Are they on Amazon and Barnes & Nobles, or are they on a website? Or?
Well, they're pretty much everywhere. You can get them on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or you can go to our website, and our website will connect you to the various places. It's kind of easier if you just go to our website, because all the books are listed there, and you just click on a thing, and bingo, you're at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. So, yes, absolutely.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Harold. It's been very interesting, and I know that you're probably one of the top leaders in the country as far as religion and healing, and so I am especially pleased that I have you as one of the two people that are opening this series.
Well, I thank you also. You're doing a great work, and I think you're getting the message out to many people, and if people don't know about this, it's not going to help them. And so what you're doing and what you've devoted your life to, I think, is a wonderful thing.
Thank you. And now a word from our sponsor, a Distinctive Style magazine. Join a Distinctive Style magazine on a luxurious magic carpet ride of environmental issues, eco-friendly opulence, gratifying visual arts, encouraging stories, and inspiring celebrity interviews, all laid out in a visually unique presentation. A Distinctive Style is a multimedia publication that intelligently combines text articles and rich full-page photographs with video clips, music, and links. The articles reveal innovative concepts, inspirational artistic perspectives, and empower the reader with significant information for the well-being of our planet and ourselves. The magazine has themes that resonate with a broad spectrum of readers. The goal is to balance that which appeals to the senses with that which provokes a desire to learn, to grow, and to live life to its fullest. The fall 2010 issue of A Distinctive Style magazine has been no exception. When you visit A Distinctive Style magazine, you'll have the opportunity to make a difference of your own. By clicking on one of the many links to charitable organizations, you'll help those that seek to make this a better world for all concerned. Take a few minutes for yourself, sit back, and relax with a magazine that will truly entertain and inspire you. www.adistinctivestyle.com. My second guest, Miss Mary McManus, is a poet, fundraiser, former award-winning social worker, 2009 Boston Marathon finisher, inspirational speaker, and an award winner in her new life discovery. A whole new world was waiting to unfold before her after the life-altering diagnosis of post-polio syndrome in December 2006. Mary was diagnosed with paralytic polio at age 5 and overcome the childhood challenges of polio, an abusive alcoholic father, and a drug addictive mother by emerging herself in her academic career. She was high school valedictorian and later received a BS in communications from Boston University and a master's of social work from Boston College, where she was induced into the Jesuit Honor Society, Alpha Sigma Nu. While working at the Veterans Affairs, Mary received a Certificate of Appreciation Award from the Blind Veterans Association, was Social Worker of the Year, and Employee of the Month, but was forced to leave in 2007 because of the diagnosis of post-polio syndrome. Although she had a vision of God while paralyzed and knew that she would have the ability to overcome and be able to walk again, she was told to quit her position with the VA after 20 years as a social worker. Thereafter, in February 2007, God spoke to Mary through poetry, and inspirational poetry began pouring out. As she continued to visualize healing and connecting with God, she began experiencing healing of mind, body, and spirit with intensive rehabilitation, lifestyle changes, and harnessing her faith through prayer, writing poetry, meditation, visualization, and seeking out healers, including an energy healer, a nurse healer online, and working with Dr. Bernie Siegel. She went on to run the 2009 Boston Marathon and raised $10,535 for Spalding Rehab Hospital. She is now the author of two books on inspirational poetry, including New World Greeting Inspirational Poetry and Musing for a New World, published in December 2007, and Set Sail for a New World, Healing a Life Through the Gift of Poetry in 2010, and donates 20% of the proceeds to Miss Wheelchair Massachusetts program. Her dream is to see a polio-free world in her lifetime. Mary has been a guest at the Jordan Rich Show on WBZ in Boston and was selected by Boston's number one FM station, Magic 106.7, as their exceptional woman. She was also a finalist for Brookline Woman of the Year 2010 and honored at their awards ceremony. She has been featured on numerous blog talk radio shows, a presenter at the 2009 Massachusetts Poetry Festival, and a speaker at the Boston Greenfest 2010. She is the subject of a short film documentary, Keep the Pace, The Mary McManus Story, and is currently working on a third book on inspirational poetry with Dr. Bernie Siegel. More information is available at www.marymcmanus.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Mary, and I look forward to hearing about your polio and post-polio experience and how you overcame these. Now, not many people know about polio or post-polio syndrome these days, so could you tell us a little bit about these conditions?
Sure, Carl, and thank you so much for having me on your show.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 5 years old, I contracted paralytic polio, and you, of course, remember polio.
Mm-hmm.
But most people don't remember because, thankfully, it's been eradicated in the United States. It's a virus that attacks the muscles and the nerves, primarily the nerves, which then don't send the messages to the muscles of what needs to happen in order for you to be able to move. And when I was five, in one of the last polio epidemics in Westchester, New York, I contracted paralytic polio, so I was paralyzed. I don't remember how long, but I do know that I went through grueling physical therapy and had to wear a leg brace. And while I was paralyzed, I had a vision of God.
Mm-hmm.
And felt as though I would be okay no matter what happened. And I was able to walk again through the help of my beloved physical therapist, Miss Holly.
Wonderful.
And then, yeah, she was amazing. She was way ahead of her time. This
mm-hmm.
is back in 1959, and
mm-hmm.
she knew about the importance of the mind-body connection.
Oh.
And then in 1996, I started having some symptoms of fatigue and weakness. My limp came back, and I didn't know what was happening, but I had an inkling that it was post-polio syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And when I asked my doctor about it, he told me that it didn't exist, and that was fine by me because I didn't want to have it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, that's fine, it doesn't exist. But I knew it existed. I knew of a woman who had it. And so I went along for 10 more years living with these symptoms that got progressively worse.
Mm-hmm.
And then in December of 2006, when I had trouble breathing, swallowing, walking, getting out of bed in the morning, and had to push myself through everything, I finally Googled post-polio syndrome and found out that, yes, it certainly did exist, and went to Spalding Rehab Hospital outpatient clinic, which specialized in post-polio syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that a shame that it took 10 years?
I know. I know, Carl. And I find out on Facebook every day I'm not alone. There was a woman who sent me a message and said, oh, my God, you deal with post-polio. And she said it took years before anybody could figure out what was wrong.
Mm. Isn't that wonderful about Facebook? Because there are two sites on vitamin B17, and then there's a cancer site that has over 1 million people. And so I've been able to help a lot of the people that have lung cancer that want to use alternative, and been able to tell them about my experience and what I used, and usually I just copy them the section of the chapter out of the upcoming book and send it to them so that they can see specifically how much of the B17 I took and what supplements I took and what my diet was, and the prayer and the meditation and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think Facebook has been a wonderful social media for people to help other people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have been so blessed to touch and inspire so many people through my healing journey.
Mm-hmm. Then, Mary, how were you able to overcome the challenge of polio?
Well, initially with the polio, it was with the grace of God and with Miss Holly, who taught me how to walk again. And at the age of 5, I had to discover a strength that I don't think a lot of 5-year-olds have to tap into. But that was just an incredible experience where you just have to tune out the pain and you go forward. And also, Miss Holly, she had such incredible healing hands, and we just worked together. And I had a stationary bike that I had to use, and I mainly focused on the physical recovery, and it wasn't until the diagnosis of post-polio syndrome that I was able to focus on the spiritual and emotional recovery from
mm-hmm.
that. And basically what I did was, after the polio, I just pursued academics and
mm-hmm.
detached from my body. I learned how to dissociate at an early age, which was great for survival, but not good in the long run.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then I just, you know, really through sheer will and God's grace, I was able to walk again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, then in 2006, when you found out that you had the post-polio syndrome, what did you do then?
Well, the first thing that I did was I got still and I started praying.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked God for guidance. And a friend of mine had told me about The Secret, the Law of Attraction,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I got it and I watched it and I said, wait a minute, I know all this. I know about the mind-body connection. And in 1984, when I was hospitalized for a staph infection in my right shoulder and almost lost the use of my right arm,
mm-hmm.
I had an angel come to me by the name of Beth Jordan, a nurse at the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and she brought me Bernie Siegel's cassette tape.
Oh, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she told me about nutrition, and she brought me trail mix, and she taught me about meditation. This is back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a slow learner, Carl, and I mm-hmm. didn't quite get the message integrated, and just went on my life, living my life after that. But I had attended many, many workshops with Bernie Siegel, and I'd sent him my drawings because I was having difficulty getting pregnant. And so I went on Bernie's forum, and I got his meditation CDs, and I started discovering that I had the gift of poetry in my soul. And in February of 2007, as I was praying, and they told me I had to leave my award-winning career as a VA social worker, and my life was crumbling, and yet I got very still and realized that God never closes a door without opening a window.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I wrote this poem called Running the Race.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time, Carl, that I had ever put down on paper my feelings about my body, my feelings about polio, my feelings about my childhood. And it was so cathartic and so healing. And I talked about celebrating my body, the fact that I needed a brace again. And I started loving myself. And in one of Bernie's books, he talks about Evie McDonald, who was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. And she hated her body, and she was withering away. It's described her body was jello in a wheelchair, and she started discovering things that she loved about herself because she didn't want to die hating her body.
Mm-hmm.
And her story really, really inspired me to really realize that even though I was in this horribly deconditioned state with pain and tremors and everything that was going on, that I was still this beautiful, beautiful person.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first step in my healing journey, aside from going through rehab and going back in a brace, et cetera, was really a journey of love and visualization and meditation. And I, once the door opened to let out the poetry, it started flooding out of me. It was unbelievable. And it made me feel so good. I was creating, I was imagining, I was transporting the places in my mind that my body couldn't go to, that never went to. And it just started this amazing journey. And I had no idea when I wrote the poem Running the Race that I was actually going to run a race. And as it turns out, in 2009, last year, I ran the Boston Marathon.
Oh, great. Now, the book, I think, was Peace, Love, and Faith, and there were tapes of it, and I came across it when I was upstate New York in August for my 60th high school reunion, and I went to a sale next door to, I went to an antique shop, and I went next door, and they had some things out, and they had Bernie's tapes. And I thought, oh, well, I'll pick these up and I'll listen to them on my way back to Virginia, because I knew it was like a 10-hour trip. And I listened to music, but I also thought, well, you know, I'll listen to something educational. So I listened to them. So I think that that tape with the example was Peace, Love, and Faith. Does that sound familiar?
Yes. Yes.
Does it? Yeah. Well, you said you had read most of his things, so. Let me ask you then, so the writing of poetry has helped you heal?
Oh, tremendously, just tremendously, because it allowed my soul to finally express itself and to express not only the pain, but then transforming the pain through God's love and through imagining myself. I would imagine myself like Gene Kelly, being barefoot and dancing in the rain and just going to all these places in my mind. And it also helped me to appreciate the world around me, because I started seeing the world through new eyes by having to slow down, by having to live in the moment, by appreciating everything that I had, and, as I mentioned, by loving myself and by just being in this entirely different space than I'd ever been in my whole life. It helped to produce this dramatic shift, and it translated into my body.
Now, Mary, do you think this would have happened had you not had polio and post-polio syndrome?
No.
So how do you look on that experience in your life?
It's been one of the most challenging and the most difficult Mm-hmm. And it's been the most incredible blessing that I could have asked for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I appreciate every minute. I am such a grateful person. And I have had the incredible experience of becoming awake mm-hmm. and becoming aware mm-hmm. and feeling connected to God in a way that I don't know if I wouldn't have had it if I would be the person I am today. And I've gotten to meet so many incredible people on this journey. And interestingly enough, I believe that because my pain was so great, my physical pain, as mm-hmm. well as emotional pain, because there was a lot of abuse that went on. My father fell into alcoholism after I began to walk again, and just the stress on the family was incredible, mm-hmm. and my mom wasn't emotionally available. But because I've known so much pain, mm-hmm. I believe that the depth of the joy and the gratitude and my love of life mm-hmm. is just so intense. And I don't know if I would have known that had
right.
this not happened to me.
Right, right. Well, I always have thought that everything happens for a reason and everything is for the best for us, which
mm-hmm.
goes along with Bernie's concepts of optimism and all. Because
mm-hmm.
I tried to stay, and it's interesting because about 2 months ago, the woman that was most helpful to me when I had lung cancer was supportive and helping me find resources, etc. And we talked on the phone. She now lives in North Carolina. And she said to me, "Why do you think you had lung cancer?" And I said, "To help other people." And she said, "That's right." And so I think that we have these experiences. They make us a better person. We're able to share, give encouragement and all to other people. And you're going through the same thing in your own life. Not only,
absolutely.
You know, with the encouragement of people that may still be around that had the post-polio, but also through your poetry and all of the, you said you're writing a book and the other things that you're doing. So I think that it's wonderful when we look at these things as a positive experience and an experience that make us a better person.
And, you know, the other thing that people have said to me, Carl, I speak at Rotary Clubs because I want people to know about polio, and it does exist in underdeveloped countries,
right.
and
mm-hmm.
Rotary International is working to create a polio-free world. We're very close to that. And as a polio survivor, I put a face and experience to polio that most people don't know about in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And people come up to me after the meetings, and they'll say, you know, I thought I was having a bad day until I heard your journey. And so I mm-hmm. can ignite the flame of gratitude and appreciation for people who may not have gone through anything but think that,
mm-hmm.
you know, their lives are so miserable.
Right.
And then
right.
they have something to compare it to, and they say, and it wakes them up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And helps to put them in a state of gratitude. So that's something else that I've experienced as well, which is really fantastic.
Right. Now, Mary, would you read one of your poems for us?
I would be delighted to, Carl. And the poem that I would love to share with you and your listeners is called Leave the Old World Behind.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And it's from my book, Set Sail, and it describes my transformation.
Mm-hmm.
For years and years, I lived behind a wall of crushing pain. Chest wall heaving, shallow breaths, at times I felt insane. Swirling thoughts of victim from life's battery energy drained. The moments of my life slipped by. Fewer years of life remained. This old world was familiar, oddly comfortable and safe. Gray and dull with little light, with chains on skin did chafe. Feeling trapped and shutting out the world outside my door. Vowing that the wall should stay, protect me evermore. Although there was no passion, no love, no laughter brought, I didn't have to face the pain that all the past had wrought. For staying trapped inside myself, no contrast to take hold. Forgetting who my master is, a slave my life was sold. Drowning in the anger, toxic poison to my soul, perpetuating human lies with no way to feel whole. Dare to cleanse the wounds inside and trust the one divine. Groping, hoping, holding breath, and waiting for a sign. Yet all those years I held the key deep inside my womb. No need to live my life alone inside my self-built tomb. Unlock myself, take off these chains that I had put on me. In truth, no one can lock me up. This truth I had to see. Peering into darkness, a ray of hope and light, God's lighthouse beckoned to me. A healing was in sight. To unbuild brick and mortar, a flood of tears the force, to sail with God and free my soul with love straight from the source. Within my heart, a joy leaps up. Explorer's lamp was lit. Excitement, fear, a restlessness were chomping at the bit. And thoughts of being victim with fear and doubt and dread are now replaced with thoughts of life and light and love instead.
Beautiful and emotional. Thank you very much,
Carl.
Mary. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Now, Mary, is there anything else you'd like to say then before we look at your books and services and products and how the listeners can reach you?
I my message is always that no matter what curveball life throws you and no matter how dire a situation may look, be it physical or financial or whatever, mm-hmm. that the most important thing is that people have faith, people know that there's always going to be a positive outcome, and to really be optimistic and to be in a state of love and gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's beautiful. Now, Mary, would you tell us about your books, services, products, and how listeners could reach you?
Sure. I have two books of inspirational poetry, and they're available through my website at www.newworldgreetings.com, and I donate 20% of my book proceeds to the Ms. Wheelchair Massachusetts Foundation. And on my website, if you click on the Pay It Forward link, you can see about that wonderful organization because I believe in giving back.
Mm-hmm.
And I also do original poetry for every occasion, and you can see my samples on that website as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a website, which is www.marymcmanus.com, and that focuses on my inspirational journey, and it has poetic reflections on the road to the Boston Marathon and my photos from Marathon Monday. And I do a blog, which is newworldgreetings.blogspot.com,
mm-hmm.
and would love to have people follow along with my adventures and sharing the wisdom that I've learned on my journey. And my email is mary@newworldgreetings.com.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope people will take some time and check out the new world I created after having my world turned upside down by a life-altering diagnosis, but now my world is brighter and more beautiful than I ever could have imagined.
Right. Well, I thank you very much, Mary. This has been interesting, and I know that it will be encouraging to the listeners. So I thank you again.
Thank you so much, Carl.
Mm-hmm. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I invite you to my website, www.holistichealthshow.com, where I place the show following broadcast on BBS Radio. There you will find, in addition to the show, the latest research twice a week on the topic discussed on the show and on cancer. You will also find my latest book, Healthy Holistic Aging, and some e-books and a CD on smoking cessation for sale. You can also sign up for a free monthly newsletter on holistic health. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a good week.